Well, I was going to say that we're here in Michael Ball's dressing room at the Shaftesbury Theatre, but I think we should say it's Edna Turnblatt's. Of course, because she's still the boss, isn't she?
Absolutely. She rules my life, as well she should. Yeah, they're kind of a demarcation. One side is very much Edna's. I try to have a little corner for myself, and hence the sort of masculine leather recliner.
It really is very masculine. Yeah. And it's not much, but it's home, isn't it? And it's been...
It's a dodgy old theatre. Did you know, I just found out, you know the last hit here was Hair?
Yes.
It was. It's true, isn't it? 40 years ago, 1968, and the opening word of Hair, and the opening word of Hairspray is Good Morning.
Is it really?
Good Morning Starshine and Good Morning Baltimore.
Do you know, I hadn't clocked that.
There you go.
That's amazing. Well, I don't need to ask you whether you're still having fun, because you've had a good time on this show.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm still here. And when I finish July 25th, and it will be nearly 2 years when you go to the rehearsal period, which was the beginning of August. So 2 years, it's been the biggest part of my life.
Amazing.
And I can't imagine any show ever coming along that will have this profound an effect on me, personally, professionally, reinvigorating my love of performing in the theatre, of being a company member. I've just had a terrific time.
Why do you think that is? What is it about this show?
It's good news. It's a good news show. It's got all the elements. It's got fab music. It's well written. It's got great characterisation. And it's got that wonderful nostalgic thing that we all, you know, those of us who are of a certain age, and you know, all think back, you know, I'm sure life was better. In the 60s, and the fact of the matter is, it was better for a certain type of strata of people, but for another, it most certainly wasn't. So to be able to look at this story of Baltimore in the 60s, which is very, I mean, on the superficial level, you can look at it and it's just fun. And, or you know, all the goodies win and all the baddies lose.
Well, particularly in these bad news times.
Exactly. But then you look a little bit deeper. I mean, the best nights we've had in this theatre, the night Obama won the election and then was inaugurated. Because it's 40 years it has taken for people who couldn't be seen together, couldn't dance together on television, to now have a president who's black. And it was absolutely palpable.
Yeah.
And I think, and talking to people who saw the show in America, and myself included, though I'm not in a position to say this, I think the show has been better here. I think it's been better served. Mm-hmm. I think there's a real integrity has gone on here. No one in all the time has turned it into a characterization, has done a sort of over-the-top turn. Mm. It's just been, you know, it's funny, we're not.
Yeah, and you're now ready to do Mama Rose.
Or Maine.
You've got two notes.
Absolutely,
from it,
absolutely. And, do you know, there's a little tiny bit of me thinks I'd be pretty good.
I mean, you know, one of the things about this show, Michael, is that it's high octane energy. Yeah. Now, how on earth, are there any tricks, there's certainly nowhere to hide, where you can, you know, every night you have to recreate that energy, because the show simply doesn't work if it isn't there.
Yeah.
So any tricks or,
well,
you know,
what you do,
how do you do it?
What you do is, well, first of all, you lead by example, because I need the energy from the kids in the show. The kids have a hell of a lot more energy than I have at my age. And we all need to get that from the audience, and that's what we do. It's easier as well in a musical. In a play, you have to set your own tempo, and you have to be the driving force. Here, there is the musical director with the baton. The minute that the orchestra starts up, that's the tempo. That's where you've got to keep up with it. And so 50% of the energy is provided for you within the music. And then, you know, there's so much joy and heart in the show that you can start off by thinking, oh God, it's another Thursday evening after a Thursday matinee, how are we going to do this? But something just takes hold of you. And there are little marks in the show that, you know, if you get those right, that the audience will then be right on top of it, and then we'll give it back. You do it in the 60s, And that finale of Act Two is the best finale. It just goes on and builds. And just when you think, no, enough, oh, let's do it again.
Yeah.
In a different key.
Yeah.
And it's a guaranteed standing ovation.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, a lot of, you're talking about maintaining energy and maintaining a long run. Take us through your typical day when you're actually in a show in the West End. How do you pace your day?
If we start in the morning, yeah. Then I normally get up at about 11. So I'll have breakfast quite late. So breakfast is kind of lunchtime. Lunchtime then becomes 5:30 before the show, and dinner is when you get home. Because I do so much else as well, it's for me. With the radio show that I do, I'm forever having to look at DVDs and CDs that I'm sent in. That I'm going to be reviewing on the Sunday
read
show, read books, do research on guests and that sort of thing, which is quite sedentary, and that's absolutely fine. That's how I love it. So what you don't do, you're always in the back of your mind, you're thinking, now I have a show coming up that night, or two on Thursday and Saturday, and they're the killers.
Yeah.
If there's one show a day, there'd be no problem. It's doing the two. And I'm quite glad that we have two on Thursday and Saturday as opposed to Wednesday and Saturday, because it feels like once you've got through Thursday, that's it, you're on the home straight.
It's funny how you think along
you,
those
you
have
lines, to, you, yeah, and you get into the routine, so food is always at the same times, always go, I'm you know, if I'm not going out for dinner, which I don't do often after the show, I just go home, I'll hit the wife, beat up the dogs, drink a bottle of wine.
As you do.
No, it's sitting down, watching telly, chatting and having a glass of wine always, and then you sort of wind down about 2 o'clock in the morning and then,
It's good that you're a great reader, I gather.
Yeah,
we've been talking about that, because that is a wonderful way of just escaping into yourself.
Although my big problem now is I've got an iTouch and the BBC iPlayer. And so you lie in bed and you think, well, I'll just see what's going on. But what I now do is I listen to plays on the earphones,
uh-huh.
and talk programs, and they send mm-hmm. me right off to sleep just like that. Melvin Bragg, really good one to sending you to kid.
He'll take that in the best spirit.
Yeah, his midweek program just gone.
Okay, so 25 years, Michael, in the business. Hardly seems possible. And you've got an album out as well to celebrate that, Michael Ball, Past and Present. On which there are several new tracks, which I've been listening to. And it's interesting to me, it starts with The Impossible Dream, which is a number that kind of says a lot about where you've been and where you've come from.
My first audition song.
Was it really?
Yeah, to get into drama school. And I've never sung it since.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Isn't it?
Well, I mean, I was going to say, you've come along from those days when you were an apprentice in the motor industry.
People have asked me that. I thought that was my dad.
It was your dad.
My dad was an apprentice in the motor industry.
Was there never
No.
So when? Yeah.
My father was not an apprentice. He wanted to be an actor, and his parents wouldn't let him. But for me, this is all I've ever been ever done. I did school, sixth form, college. Failing drama school.
So it really wasn't just a twinkle in the eye quite late. It started from the very beginning that you thought...
Well, no, it just because I had no idea what I wanted to do, and I knew I didn't want to go into any kind of business. I'd be useless at it. But what I did want to do is stay as a student for another 3 years because I quite enjoyed that life. And because I loved theatre and so on, someone said, go to drama school. And it was a strange event, because although I'd always been into the theatre, always loved being part of youth theatre, enjoyed partaking, it never occurred to me I could do it, that I could join the industry. I don't know why. It's kind of crazy. Almost like, you can't have your dream.
Yeah.
And then when someone said, well, go to drama school and study and take it seriously and then go into the business, you can.
You see, I'm always astonished when I hear you sing that you've never had any lessons.
Mm.
It's an instinctive thing. You know how to place your voice, you know what works for you. It also interests me, listening to this album, how the voice has changed. Yeah. And, sorry, I'm going to cough there. It also interests me how the voice has changed, because there are more colours now. There are richer colours. And also life experience has changed you. And would you agree that you're singing songs now with a greater understanding of what they're about?
Bound to be. Interesting, on the album, I listened to the very first recording of Empty Chairs, which is the first time I was ever in a studio. And I think it's awful. I've included it because it's but I think I sing it so much better now. Love changes everything. I'm a boy. I'm a kid singing now.
Yeah.
And so it's not just the timbre of the voice, it is the emotion that goes into it. Also, in the sort of mid-years, I'm a smoker.
Yeah.
And that's really noticeable on a couple of tracks.
Yeah. Have you, I mean, it's been 2 years.
Over 2 years now. And God, it shows.
And what
because
do you feel? Does it
show? I just
feel
like I
can totally
breathe,
different?
Like, yeah. I've got the recovery in the voice. What's interesting, I couldn't have made this album if I'd been a smoker, because I'm doing the show here at night. I simply wouldn't have had the energy, my voice would have been shot. Now, I was going in and I was singing live with the orchestra, and I could do it. Big songs, Gethsemane is a big song, but able to do it over and over again. Mm. And that made me feel that's the inspiration for carrying on giving up, because even now I would love a fag, I would love one, but the difference it's made to me,
yeah,
on every, and I hope, I just hope I gave up in time, because there is obviously a point in your life that even if you give up when you've been smoking for so long, you've done yourself untold damage anyway and you won't get over it. Mm. I was 45 when I stopped, or 44, so I really hope that I am this side of the Russian roulette of smoking.
It's interesting what you said though, Michael, about the greater understanding and life experience. I remember talking to Barbara Cook once, not comparing you to you
please
understand,
because she's like the best there is,
but she said, I listened to all my early stuff, she said, and I think, well, yes, you made a pretty noise and this, that, she said, but she said, I don't recognize the singer I am today.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely true. She's just
having said which, I'm not ashamed of the early recordings, and I celebrate the fact that they were there, and celebrate who he was. I just love the fact that I can still go and do shows and now revisit those songs, and an audience who thinks they've heard me sing it are hearing it with fresh ears. That's really satisfying, because also the audience has changed. They've grown a bit. They're getting more out of what you're singing, because they first heard Love Changes or whatever 20 years ago.
Yeah. With the top B at the end.
Yeah, yeah. We're not quite doing that anymore. Not when we're
just
in.
As Barbara Cook is not doing
well,
top C's in.
Absolutely. Mind
yeah.
you, if I'm. She's 80. Is she 80?
80, no older.
Yeah, 80 something.
85, I think.
She's never.
Yeah.
Well, if I could sing anything like that
exactly.
at her age.
Exactly.
Well, incredible voice, Barbara, because what Barbara has is no break.
Yeah.
She is. Big belty, but goes up and up and up, and there isn't.
That's
that
because she's always had a soprano voice, and she's always used her head
yeah.
voice. It's the kids who won't use the head voice or mix it and just try to belt everything.
But the strength in that head voice.
Yeah,
I did. It went to a masterclass of hers at Juilliard. It's brilliant, just brilliant. She's getting these kids. I've tried to do the same. I take the same sort of format of getting kids to come sing a song. Then talk them through it, and then give them. And hers is not about singing technique and vocal technique. Hers is all about the approach to the song and what you're trying to say. And it was brilliant what she did. Absolutely brilliant.
I came in to your career with Les Mis, which I saw at the Barbican before it came into.
It's about the time I came into my career then. It's 23 years ago.
It was about 4 hours long at the Barbican.
Do you know, on the Saturday, first Saturday in previews that we did, as we're doing the very last, do you hear the people sing in the matinee? We had the half hour call for the evening show. Not a word of a lie. Dear God.
That is wonderful. But you know, I was watching a YouTube recently of the reunion at of the original cast. Was it the Palace or the Queen?
Where you did the
Act One finale.
Yeah.
It amused me because, of course, Patti LuPone was there, the original Fantine, not singing a note because she's dead by that point in the show. And I thought, this must be the quietest Patti's ever been on the stage.
She made up for it, though, when she then did. She does a bit of I Dreamed a Dream. They did a segue between...
Oh, did they? They've only got the other bit.
Oh, it was quite interesting because previously Cats had been the longest running show. So they did the segue of Elaine Page coming in singing with Grisabella, Memory, and then handing over ceremonially the Grisabella coat to Patti to sing I Dreamed a Dream, becoming the longest, because Les Mis became the longest running show. So it was great having those two on the stage. We were at dinner beforehand, and I had Elaine one side and Patti the other. And, you know, talk about caught between a rock and a hard place.
Now, tell me, of the work you've done in those 25 years, I mean, you've had all kinds of different experiences, and you've reinvented, as we all do, you've reinvented yourself many times. What have been some of your proudest achievements? And you're not allowed to mention Hairspray at this point.
Okay, fair enough.
But I'm just... One of the things Passion. I thought you were really impressive.
Oh, that's nice, because I don't know if many people did.
Well, because it was a seriously difficult acting role.
Yeah.
60% of it is dialogue.
Yeah, I got better. I did. I got a lot better in it as time went on. Because, God, it was hard. And it's one of the hardest pieces that Stephen has written, and what Giorgio was kind of unreal. You know, it's very difficult to actually convince of his journey. Stephen writing the extra song for Giorgio, the I Love Fosca song, kind of made it a bit easier, but all that song was saying was, I don't know why I feel like I do, but I feel it. So it was quite hard. And I was really pleased that we got to do it and bring it over, and because it wouldn't have seen out of day here otherwise.
I mean, it's a difficult role because, in a sense, he's being shuttled between two.
Yeah, and he's a bit of a
two women with different objectives.
He's a bit of a wanker. I mean, to be honest, he's winding up Clara. He's far too nice to Fosca, and so she has this obsession with him, and then falls in love with her. Kind of inexplicably. It's a bizarre.
Because he learns what unconditional love is, I guess.
Yes, but that doesn't mean you have to return it. But he does. And he also knows, which I never quite worked out, why sleeping with her will kill her. Because that's what happens. And so that ultimate sacrifice, if it is that, it's a strange piece. And that's why I loved it. But it took me a long time to get deep enough. You know, to the end of the show where I was just loving the multi layers of it, as opposed to I'm in a lovely suit as a soldier singing pretty songs, which is tempting. So that was a highlight. The Donmar show, the Donmar one man show, which we did at the Haymarket, was a real challenge, which I don't think anybody saw coming.
I think that was the best thing you've ever done. I didn't see it coming. And I thought it was incredibly courageous. And it was such an emotional journey as well. Because, I mean, you know, even those who didn't recognise why the songs were presented in the way they were, you know.
And there were a lot of people who didn't, who just kind of went, why isn't he talking? And why has he put that song there? And But there were, for everyone who didn't, there were loads of people who did. And it was brilliant. Putting that together, me, Jonathan, and Jason Carr, Jonathan Butterall and Jason Carr, and three of us just sat, and it was wonderfully cathartic, and it was great to be shocking, and to do it in that space. Isn't it strange that space at the Donmar provides so many different artists from from the theatre with a springboard to really dare themselves to do things that they wouldn't do otherwise. It's kind of, you know, if you're going to go out of the I do hate the expression getting out of your comfort zone, but it's kind of what it is, then that's the place to do it.
Yeah,
and you feel
2 foot from the audience.
You almost feel duty bound to do something that's going to be, you know, a bit shocking and a bit startling. And that thing of seeing people, you know, right next to me, not mic'd up, just the piano, and to just go,
yeah.
That was
amazing.
Lovely.
It was amazing.
And the absolute opposite of that, I guess, but still as satisfying, was the prom at the Albert Hall. So this time in the Albert with a full orchestra, with a lot of sneering going on by classical...
not exactly intimate, that venue.
No, and people saying, what on earth has that boy been given his own prom for? Which may have had a point, but I had it, and I wasn't going to say no to it.
But those people don't know your history.
Well, I presume so.
Yeah.
But so to have exactly the opposite, and to have all those songs, because the Don Mar, it was songs I've never sung before. The prom are all the songs that are the proper showy genre songs that I do, and to do it in that setting with an orchestra.
There was also something else, I suppose, with the Don Mar, Michael, and that is the enormous risks you took, which really did pay off. I know that you went through a difficult period when you were in Les Mis, which wasn't just about being unwell, it was about, you know, a sort of fear.
Yeah, it was what it was, to be frank, it was a breakdown. It was an emotional and mental breakdown. And... you know, it's if you don't recognise that at the time, which I didn't, and I just thought, I just thought I was a bit nutty. I was a nutter. And I probably should have gone and got help, but I didn't. But having got through that, and you know, I'd be lying if I said I'm not vulnerable to that, because I am. You know, I always present this.
That's
to the world. That's
why
that's
nobody will believe it. Will
that's
they?
What I do. But yes. Of course, that's what I do. And anyone who thinks that someone is as, you know, two dimensional as I can sometimes appear is, you know, is well, they're not thinking very clearly, are they? But I have never felt the need, the desire, or the want to open up about me, because. It's not for anyone to know. I share an awful lot with my work, and give hints of stuff with my work, and so people can draw their own conclusions with that. And I think that's by far the best way. I think that the culture that we have, and I think it is changing, but that culture of wearing everything, you know, on your sleeve, on your trousers, on your face, of everything that happens in your life. You're going through it, it's terribly unhealthy. I think it really is, because we're on an ongoing journey, and I don't know. You don't need it. You don't have any answers. We'll only have the answers at the very end. So there's no point sitting there and saying this is why this happens, and I got over this because it could happen again. Anything can happen again. So do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think.
But all of that is very much informed by the work I do. So yes, the Don Mar show was a big exorcism of a lot of demons for me, and so self indulgent.
But it was powerful.
Thank you.
It was powerful. It really was, and it's the most out there you've ever been.
Yeah, yeah.
And that proved a lot of things to a lot of people.
Well, but people do forget that, you know. The Don Mar, I can't remember how long ago it is now, and not that many people will have got to see it. It's great that people like yourself, who, you know, whose opinions I do respect, and did bother. This is what has always annoyed me about not critics so much, but feature writers and journalists and so on, who actually. Will write something off and dismiss it without actually having bothered to listen or get involved. They've probably never been to a concert, never been to anything. They just will put what they think is in a public psyche. Hence, you get those awful tags that you think, oh, get a grip.
But also, people think they've seen, you talked about the image you present.
Yeah.
People think they've seen the whole Michael Ball when they
so.
Look
yeah.
at that.
Yeah.
And what the Donmar show proved was that there was just so much more to you.
But isn't there to everyone?
Yeah, well, there is, but that's the
you
danger
know?
Of showbiz,
yeah.
is that you're
yeah.
presenting an image, and people don't use their imagination, and they want
yeah,
to allow
I suppose
you to
so. All
push
the
boundaries.
All the turns don't take a risk.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Tell me, you're about to go on another tour, and your assistant Andrew is telling me, you know, what a palaver that is, and how exciting, but also what a stress
oh,
it is.
Yeah, it really
you know,
is.
Getting into buses and, you know, caterers.
And also I'm doing a different kind of a tour this time. We're taking a small orchestra as opposed to a band.
Right.
And I'm not going to take three backing singers. Normally it's 12 musicians and three backing singers. Always has been. Very safe. This time I'm taking a bigger orchestra. It's going to be about 25 piece. And I'm taking six performers, other performers with me. And I've just about finalised who they are. And they're all people from the West End who I've worked with. And so I can try and do, and I want to feature them. There are a lot of younger performers. I'll tell you who they are. I don't know if I should.
Oh, go on.
Okay, but oh, can we cut this if we have to? Because they haven't signed their contracts yet.
Oh, okay.
But they've all kind of agreed. When is this going on the...
Well, it should go out straight away, so maybe you better be...
Oh, okay.
Is there anybody that's certain?
Ben James Ellis.
Who
Link
plays
Larkin.
In the show in Hairspray. Yeah.
Adrian Hansel, who plays Seaweed in the show. Rachel Wooding, who is currently doing the Evita tour, who's phenomenal. She was in We Will Rock You and... what was the other thing? I can't remember. She's fabulous. I think Laura Michelle Kelly...
Wow.
Will be coming. I'm hoping John Owen Jones.
Oh, I saw him, you know, at Do Les Mis in New York.
He's stunning.
Not so long
yeah.
ago, and it's the best
he's,
I've ever
he's
seen.
He's phenomenal
him.
And such a nice bloke. And Louise Marshall, who's an incredible singer. That's the lineup that I'm hoping for. And at the moment, it looks like it's all coming together. Mm. So what I'll be able to do with that, because I don't want it, rather than have a warm up support act and then do the second
yes.
half, I want to do the whole show. I want to give people a real spectacle. I want them to hear voices, and with those people we have some phenomenal voices which people won't have heard with the shows that they've been doing, but I've heard because
yeah.
I hang around with them and I've seen them and I've spot talent, and we have phenomenal movers. Ben and Adrian are the most incredible dancers, so maybe there's something
yeah.
I can do.
Yeah.
I'm getting a choreographer and director on board, so something I could do to highlight their talent. Give me opportunity of doing duets, of doing big company numbers, of giving them solos, of trying other stuff out, so it's not just the standard.
This,
what I always
this
do.
I have to catch.
Well, I hope so. We're
yeah.
doing it. We're doing two nights now at the Albert Hall.
Yeah.
We tour, as I say, in September and October, and it's still all germinating. I kind of had to commit to something in order to force me to devise something, if you know what I mean. So kind of like with the Donmar. So I said, well, if we take a bigger orchestra, if we take these top people who have agreed to do it, and we'll be doing backup, we'll be doing everything, then I have to utilise it, and I have to find a way of making it work. I'm kind of wondering, am I going to be shown up?
Never.
Do you know what? But then I can light the thing, so they could be in darkness for the entire show, or off stage. You know, there's
it's
nothing in their contract guaranteeing them being on.
You got some safeguards
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I like that challenge. I mean, and I think the audience who come to the gigs deserve something new. And I want to keep it fresh. I want to keep finding new ways of doing what I do. And it wouldn't be great if this turned into something else. You know, was it the idea of something else? So that's my plan.
Tell me if there are any other musical theatre roles that you would... I think I know one.
Yeah.
That you would crave.
Yeah. And who knows, eh?
Sweeney must be.
Sweeney,
one.
Is it? Sweeney's
and
it.
Your voice has changed sufficiently to,
yeah.
You know, because it's low. A lot of that part is
very
low.
And, yes, and it is something that I really hope will happen.
Big smile, Michael Wall. There's a clue. And, you know...
Do you know another good show?
Yeah.
Which is, I'm really surprised wasn't a hit here, and it's well worth looking at again, is City of Angels.
Oh, yeah. Cy Coleman.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I liked it a lot too. Like it a lot.
Yeah.
It's very clever.
It's a thought.
Knows.
And I wonder if there'll be any new ones written.
Well, I mean, it's because of the financial situation at the moment. I mean, it's so many talented writers are not getting the chance of getting their stuff seen.
Yeah.
Which is a great shame, because there is a huge amount of talent.
But you know what?
I mean,
in all the depressions, in all the recessions, sometimes that actually inspires new directions in musical theatre. It always has. And theatre has always traditionally survived through... and sometimes thrived through these things. So maybe that will, well, who knows? Maybe that will be the outcome.
You certainly know you're on Shaftesbury Avenue here.
Yes, I'm sorry it's so loud.
And it's a good job I'm not doing Edna tonight, because I've been croaking here a bit. Michael, just to wind things up a bit, I mean, almost you should turn around and start interviewing me now, because that's what you're doing with your hosting a radio show every week. And I mean, I remember when I came as your guest on the Radio 2 Arts programme,
oh,
you were filling in with that for a while, and I thought, he's a natural at this. I mean, you love talking to people, don't you?
Yeah,
and,
I do.
And it must enrich you so much, because the variety of people you get on that
show is it's fabulous. What I like about it is that I'm not limited to... It's not just an arts program,
yes.
So I get to do the news, review newspapers. I get to talk with the journalists about what's really happening. I like to think I'm a punter, so that's how I approach everything within the show. So I don't have one type of music I want to play, because I'm like everyone else. I like to listen to lots of kinds of music. The stories that we look at in the paper are the choice of the journalist, but they're kind of, and it's my reaction to them as well as the journalist's take on them. The arts, you know, the new DVDs and the new films and the new telly programs and radio, kind of what everyone is going to be watching.
Mm.
And I'm lucky, it's the best bit of the job, you get them sent to you, you know, the week earlier.
Yeah.
And then the special guests who come in, who predominantly from the performing arts and writers and so on, I'm just having a chat. Like, you know, because that's what it should be. I think it's kind of what you do. You know, you go through the research, but I never have a list of questions.
Yeah.
It literally is what comes into my head, and I'm always kind of interested in
it. And what people, you pick up on what people say to you.
And
I mean, that's the best interview.
And what radio does, kind of exactly what we're doing here, is it's one-on-one, and people are, I don't know, they're not self-conscious. If you do things on television, everyone is first and foremost obsessed with how they look and body language and am I wearing the right...
Interesting you say that, Michael. I'm a great audio man, and I really believe that you can achieve much more,
far more
fluency and intimacy.
Yeah. Yeah. Far more. You don't have an audience. You have an audience, but they're not audible.
Yeah.
You know, there's not people, you know, you're trying to make a crack a joke to make... the studio audience laugh, and therefore the audience at home in television think, oh, he's funny and clever. It's just the two of you. And it's never just about plugging.
Mm.
You know, you don't want to say, you know, on the other hand, the only reason people will come in and talk is because they have something that they want to, a new project that they want people to hear about, which is absolutely right. We're here, I want to talk about, you know, the fact that I've done Hairspray, the new album, and the tour, which is available in good shop. But that is the conceit, isn't it? That's how we all get into the same room to start what we're doing. Then I think it's about So you absolutely are honourable about that and talk about the new project, because it is interesting. Why are people doing what they're doing other than to make money? And then it's about exactly what, you know, the other things that they've done and what interests them and why they are who they are, because I'm interested.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah, absolutely. Being interested, being inquisitive.
Yeah. But not being, having no agenda.
Yeah.
Absolutely no one, anybody coming on my show would know I'm not there to stitch anyone up or to get some exclusive or to get some, you know, dramatic insight. But sometimes they happen. An extraordinary one with Melvin Bragg, who we talked about, when he came on, he'd never, ever spoken publicly. He'd written his autobiography, well, fictionalised autobiography, talking about his first wife committing suicide and their relationship and so on. But he'd never talked about it in public, and he did. He suddenly felt it was all right.
Mm.
To talk to me about, and I was kind of, well, that's nice.
Well, that's
nice. He was very glad that he had afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't think, oh God, what have I done there?
Yeah. Well, I think that openness and being inquisitive makes you a better performer as well.
Yeah.
Because you're always looking for new angles,
and it's fun, and it's nice to talk to the public as well.
Yeah.
You know, when they phone.
Well, here's the next 25 years.
Yeah.
And what's your idea of a perfect day, Michael? When you're, I mean, regards working, clearly, I think you need adventure.
I'd like to, it'd be nice to wake up thinking, I've had a really good night's sleep and I'm ready to face the day, because quite often you wake up going, oh God, I'm so tired. I'm always tired. And go, do you know what? There's no cold. My voice is working really well. The sun is shining, but there's no hay fever. The dogs are well, there's no diarrhea. Kath loves me still. There's a beautiful breakfast waiting. We go to there's a gig happening in that night, because I love doing concerts. The concert goes well. We go for a great dinner afterwards with loads of friends and family. And I could have a lion the next day. That would be pretty choice for me.
Well, you're off to have your physio now.
Yeah.
There's those heels.
The boobs,
havoc, aren't they?
The boobs are worse.
Are they?
Yeah, because they pull you forward, and then with the heels.
The posture gets.
But I'm never going to give them up, obviously. Cross-dressing is now, I'm afraid, a major feature of my life. Long may it continue. Cheers, mate.
Fantastic. That's